Hello and welcome to the Top of the Progs Dark Side of the Moon 50th Anniversary Special here on Smile Radio and also in association with and broadcasting on Progzilla Radio. You're currently listening to Speak to Me, followed by Breathe by Pink Floyd. Speak to Me, followed by Breathe, tracks 1 and 2, or just technically track 1 from Pink Floyd's legendary The Dark Side of the Moon album, which last week celebrated its mammoth 50th anniversary. All those years ago, Pink Floyd set out to create something different and truly progressive, and they really did. Anyway, hello and welcome to this week's very special episode of Top of the Progs on Smile Radio and Progzilla Radio. Now, I was really thinking about how to approach this Dark Side of the Moon special. I thought it would be... It's a really big album. Everybody's heard Dark Side of the Moon a million times. I'm sure everybody listening to this right now has heard Dark Side of the Moon and are intimately familiar with it more times than they can count. So I thought it would be fun to go through the album, maybe play some different live versions of some of the tracks throughout the years, and also give you some rare and unique facts about the album, which I can probably guarantee you have never heard before. This special promises to be Dark Side of the Moon with facts and live versions and little bits bits of trivia that you may have never heard before. So I'll start off with the trivia. So basically, they started out basically wanting to create a longer, kind of more extended piece. They'd done Echoes on the Medal album, and they kind of thought, we can push this even further. We can do a whole album with a unifying theme and concept. So they got together at Roger Waters' house, and they were kind of like, they kind of decided on the theme of the stresses of modern life, or modern life as it was in 1973, but they kept it so broad and universal that the album has remained timeless to this day. You know, they were vague enough with some of the concepts that, you know, it still sounds fresh, and a lot of the lyrics haven't really aged that much. So they wrote down the stresses of life, which of course time, money, birth, death, wealth, you know, just basically the general problems we all face in life, you know, the rich and poor, all the kind of poverty, working class, upper class, all that kind of stuff, politics, religion. And they decided to tackle it as a full album. And they thought, yeah, let's call it The Dark Side of the Moon. They came up with the title The Dark Side of the Moon. Then they found out that the American, I think it was either American or Canadian band called Medicine Head were about to release an album called The Dark Side of the Moon. So they thought, ah, crap. So they called it Eclipse, a piece for assorted lunatics, and they started playing the whole album pretty much pretty early on, around from February 1972 onwards, and it gave them a full year of playing the album live, like pretty much in one go, like all in one set, to get intimately familiar with it, to create the definitive version of it when they hit into the studio. So, I mean, as sure as you all know, we have Speak to Me, we have Breathe, and then we have On the Run. The start of On the Run is the EMS VCS3 synthesizer, which had a sequencer in it, which basically allowed them to play in this keyboard sequence and then speed it up and filter it and put it through loads of effects and just have a lot of fun with it. But here's the thing, when they were making Dark Side of the Moon, when they originally wrote that, that synthesizer with the sequencer wasn't available yet, so they created a new kind of piece to basically link Breathe and Time together, and the piece was called The Travel Sequence, and it was basically this long kind of jam where they wanted to get across the stresses and rushes of travelling in modern life. And before they recorded the famous version of On the Run Now, they did actually record a version of this said travel sequence as it was played on the stage throughout much of 1972 onwards. So this is the original studio version of On the Run, long before the synthesizers, before the futuristic version, we had this. This is The Travel Sequence by Pink Floyd. And there you have it, the travel sequence. Can you imagine how different history would have been as a whole, music history, if at the end of Breathe we got that final chord and it went dun-dun-dun-dun and went into that? I mean, it would have been a totally different album, and I think in this case it worked out for the best. Yes, that bit of music is fun and great, but it isn't the future-y kind of horrific, nightmarish thing that On The Run is. So I think the Pink Floyd made the right call in there, going with the scrapping it and going with the synthesised version. So at this point, we're in mid-1972, the band have played Dark Side many, many times live on stage, and Medicine Head have released their album, The Dark Side of the Moon, and just so it happened for Pink Floyd, the album was a massive flop. So Pink Floyd quickly retitled their new work The Dark Side of the Moon, because they thought nobody's gonna get it mixed up with this terrible Medicine Head album. But of course, as we know, next on the album comes Time. Time starts off with the intros of the ticking clocks, which were, funnily enough, from a BBC sound effects library. Basically, the BBC did these like sound effects things, you know, for TV shows and things like that, where you could just like get a sound of some clocks. And I think it was actually in the EMI samples library that they found a bunch of clocks, and they basically got out a bunch of stopwatches so they could press play exactly the same time to create the song's iconic intro. Now, this version of Time is from Pink Floyd's excellent 1995 live album Pulse, where they played the full Dark Side of the Moon, I think for the first time since about 1974 or 75, but this is Time live in 1994 by Pink Floyd.
bows the faithful to their knees to hear the softly spoken magic spells.
David Gilmour's guitar tone on that, as on Pulse, is absolutely outstanding, as is the entire performance. It was so nice, I mean, that one of the many, many highlights of Pink Floyd getting back together to create a momentary lapse of reason in the Division Bell. I mean, regardless or not of whether you like those albums, the fact that they were able to go on tour and play those old songs with David, Nick and Rick was just something really special. Roger Waters was invited to join the European leg of Pulse, but apparently he never received the invitation. I don't know who's lying there, but anyway, regardless. So the next song on the album, Create, is a moment which could never be replicated live. And to this day, you know, the magic of what was captured in the studio on that faithful day in mid-1972 has never been able to be recaptured and recreated. And some songs have that, the thing, the, you know, the one-off thing that was a one-off thing in history that could never, ever be reproduced. And The Great Gig in the Sky is one of them. Now, there's a lot going on in this track. Like, in some ways, it's kind of overshadowed by the vocal performance, but for good reason, because it's one of the greatest vocals of all time. But just as a piece of music, The Great Gig in the Sky is phenomenal. It was written by Richard Wright, and it's one of his most original piano pieces. His jazz influence really shows throughout, and before Claire Torrey came in to do the iconic vocal, there were lots of discussion as to what should go over the top. So when they performed Great Gig in the early days, before the female vocals were on it, there was a Bible reading going over the top, talking about the destruction of Earth in the Book of Revelation. That was initially what was being said over the really hectic bits of Great Gig in the Sky. And when you listen to those bootlegs, it's quite horrible and atmospheric, and you know, it does make you think when you listen to it, think this is really grim. But I think the edge was taken off it a little bit by the vocal in that kind of respect. It's not as grim as what they originally had. Another idea that Alan Parsons had, who was engineering the album, was that it should be astronauts. He could hear in his head astronauts, you know, talking to each other over the radios and stuff, playing over this track. But in the end, they said they wanted some female vocals, so Alan got in his mate, Claire Torrey, and basically they said, you know, just go in there. And I think she said that, so she did an interview once where she said that Roger gave her a can of lager to relax before she went into the studio, and she went in and she delivered this amazing vocal performance. This is The Great Gig in the Sky by Pink Floyd.
Oh,
And there you have it, halfway through Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. Now, back in the day in 1973, one of the great things about vinyl, one of the things that Pink Floyd themselves actually talk about in documentaries about Dark Side, is that once you got to the end of Great Gig, there was a pause because you had to get up. You know, even if you're on cassette, you had to stop what you were doing, flip the vinyl over to listen to the next half of the album. And that process took maybe 20 seconds, but that 20 seconds gives you ample time to pause, thought, and reflect on what you've just heard throughout the album. Now, Claire Torrey, when she performed the vocal on The Great Gig in the Sky, the rest of the band afterwards were so shocked by what they'd heard, they were so impressed and moved, that they just didn't say anything when she came back into the control room. She said, yeah, they said something like, yep, yeah, great, thanks for that, and then she left, and she had no idea that her part was even used on the album until she saw it in a record store one day after it had come out, opened it up, and then it said, oh, Great Gig in the Sky, vocals, Claire Torrey, and then she put it on and listened to it and thought, wow, this is really something. So we shift on to the second half of the album now, and side two opens with maybe the album's hit single. Basically, it was the only one that the record company thought this could be a single, but it's one of the greatest songs in that if anyone says, what's an odd time signature, you give them this song, you say, this is a perfect example of what an odd time signature is. It's probably one of the, it's like one of the riffs you learn when you're learning guitar or bass. This is one of the first things you play. It's just so simple, so intuitive, yet such a brilliant kind of satire, I guess, on capitalism and greed. This is Money by Pink Floyd, live from the Pulse version in 1994.
Legends.
That version of Money is great for the extended middle section and to have the man himself back. Now, the man himself who I'm referring to is another key player on Dark Side of the Moon, who basically was just one of David Gilmour's old mates from Cambridge who he used to be in a band with. So when they were cutting Money and Us and Them and all those tracks, they thought, wouldn't it be great to get a saxophone solo on some of those pieces of music? And yeah, that's a great idea, let's do that. So they weren't really sure who to ask, and then David remembered he was in a band with called Joker's Wild with a guy called Dick Parry, who was a good saxophonist who was a few years older than David, and they brought him down, and of course he became the Pink Floyd saxophone guy, performing on Dark Side of the Moon, Wish You Were Here, and on the tours pretty much all throughout the 70s, on the Animals tour, Wish You Were Here, kind of gigs, I don't know if they really did a tour for that, and then he was brought back for the Pulse tour and he played on some tracks on the Division Bell, and he is another one of the kind of staple member but not a member kind of Pink Floyd characters. What I absolutely love is playing on the album. Now at this point I think I would like to bore everybody with some technical specs about Dark Side of the Moon. So Dark Side of the Moon, as we said, is engineered by Alan Parsons, and one of the kind of funny things about it is that it's known for having a consistent sound. You know, it's one of the kind of stereo test records. It's one of those albums where the drums sound exactly the same on every single song, like it's one continuous piece of music. But what's baffling about that is that at that point Nick Mason only had one drum kit. So he said, like, they did an interview recently, Nick and Alan, this was maybe a couple of years ago, where they were talking about Dark Side, and they were saying that now, you know, you have a studio kit, which you use in the studio that's left set up all the time for the consistent sound, then you have a live kit, which gets taken out on the road. Nick just had one back in 73, so he would come in, they'd record a couple of drum tracks, then they'd tear his kit down, put all the mics away, and then set it up again and try and kind of match it to how it was before, and they were saying it's a miracle, considering that, you know, everything was in a different position. They had to take up and set down the kit and the mics so many times because of gigs that they were able to achieve such a consistent sound. Now, the album was actually mixed by Roxy Music producer Chris Thomas. So basically, they got to the end of the recording of the album. Alan was either busy or they wanted somebody else to mix it. I can't remember exactly what the story is, but basically, they contacted Chris Thomas, and Chris Thomas, they basically gave him $10,000 to mix the album. And there were many fights over the mixes of Dark Side of the Moon. So basically what would happen is they would agree to do like a day, like, you know, 10 a.m. till 8 p.m. or something like that, and they would mix it. David Gilmour wanted the vocals to be very low. He wanted everything to be drenched in reverb and very spacey, whereas Roger wanted the vocals really loud right up front, and he also wanted a dry, hit it in your head like a hammer kind of mix. And it turned out that each of the member would kind of stay behind after the other went and try and undo everything they did to get it sounding how they wanted. But in the end, I think Chris made the right call on the album. We have loud, present vocals with spacey, reverb instruments, and it's amazing. Now, this next song is my favourite off of Dark Side of the Moon. It's an amazing piece of music. This is a live version from 1987, and Rick's piano playing on this is just amazing. It's a Rick Wright composition, mostly, like, the music is a Rick Wright thing. Basically, they were doing a soundtrack to a film called The Zabriskie Point. There was, like, a riot scene in the film, and Rick composed this instrumental piano piece called The Violent Section, which then later became this next song. This is Us and Them live in 1987 by Pink Floyd. Rick Wright's piano playing on that is just absolutely lovely, as is everything else on the song. It's a great version of the classic from Dark Side of the Moon. It's definitely my favourite song off Dark Side. It's just so weighty and kind of so minimal and just, yeah, so kind of perfect and powerful. There's a great bit on Pink Floyd Live at Pompeii where it's showing them record Dark Side in the studio, and Rick's laying down some of his lovely, lovely grand piano parts for us and them, and it's a great watch whilst Roger is talking about how angry he was when people said that Obscured by Clouds was a bad album, which is also quite funny. But anyway, so the next song on the album is definitely, in my opinion, the dud of the album, the one that nobody likes. I don't know, you know, every album has its dud, it has its bad song, and for me, Any Colour You Like has been the dud of Dark Side of the Moon. But there are some fantastic live versions of the song, specifically in the early days, where they would just go absolutely wild with it, and this is one of them. This is Any Colour You Like by Pink Floyd, live in Wembley in 1974.
Thank you.
I think maybe that kind of 74-ish kind of period, maybe that was kind of the pinnacle of live Pink Floyd, maybe. Maybe, I don't know. When they were playing Dark Side on the Road in those big, big shows for the first time, I mean, they said they hated it because the audiences were really loud and noisy and setting off fireworks, but when you listen to the live recordings, they were a band on fire at that point. So we're now, unfortunately, nearing the end of this week's Mammoth Special. 50 years on, Dark Side of the Moon still sells 10,000 copies a week. Can you believe that? Still 10,000 people a week are hearing Dark Side of the Moon for the first time. I think that's absolutely incredible. Thank you all for joining me. I think you know what we've got left. We've got the two tracks that close Dark Side of the Moon. This is the Pulse versions of them. I hope you all enjoyed it. I hope you all took home a brand new Dark Side of the Moon fact that you didn't know before, and I hope you all enjoyed this week's show. This is Brain Damage followed by Eclipse live in 1994 by Pink Floyd. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have a good week. Goodbye.
The lunatic is on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass, remembering games and daisy chains and laughs. Got to keep the loonies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my home. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more.
Tunes. I see you on the dark. takes you back, doesn't it? Thank you very much indeed. Good night to you. Hope we'll see you again. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.